You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookseller. Publishers Weekly calls Get Scrappy a helpful digital marketing Bible. You can read the first chapter, get special digital extras, and learn more now at GetScrappyBook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Erica McGillivray. Erica spends a ridiculous amount of time being geeky, both professionally and personally. At Moz, she's the senior community manager, wrangling 500,000 plus people and co-running their annual conference, MozCon. Erica also is a founder of Geek Girl Con, is a published author, and has a comic book collection that's an earthquake hazard. Follow her at E. McGillivray, and that is, as we were just discussing, E-M-C-G-I-L-L-I-V-R-A-Y. Erica, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks for having me.
You know, we don't spell out everybody's name here on the On Brand podcast, but speaking as a Westergaard with two A's, I'm always thankful when someone who isn't me and is interviewing me for something audio-focused remembers that it might not be spelled as people think, so.
It's a long one, but, you know, if you also just, like, Google Erica at Moz, you'll find me.
So. Ah, that's the shortcut. That's the shortcut.
Tricks.
Erica at Moz. So tell us about Erica at Moz. What does Erica do at Moz? Hopefully doesn't talk about herself in the third person as much as I've just started doing.
Hopefully not. So I'm part of a six-person community team, which is like a huge, huge team. But at Moz, we have a big community, and our brand actually historically comes from our community. Back in the day, about 10 years ago, our founder, Rand Fishkin, started blogging about this thing called SEO. And surprisingly, people wanted to talk about it. And it really, our brand has just grown from there. Our team is kind of broken, our community strategy is really broken into three parts. The first part is social media. So if you interact with us on Twitter, on Facebook, all those great fun places we all like to be on, we're there. And then we have an on-site portion where we have a Q&A forum. And people go on there to ask their questions about SEO, about web development, kind of whatever kind of your online marketing need is and problem you're having. Our experts are on there. Our staff is on there. And we also have some paid experts as well to come in to answer. And then plus the great community who wants to help everyone out. And we also do a user-generated content blog where we work with anyone in the community who wants to submit a post, and we help them polish it and edit it and get it published. And we also do all the moderation on all the comments on both our blogs, both our main blog and then our user-generated blog. Then our third kind of branch of community management is our events. And so we have in September our big conference, MozCon's coming up. So I'm kind of knee-deep into that right now. And then we additionally have a smaller conference focused on local SEO in February. And we've been putting on small evening talks, which we call Moz Talks. And some of those are based in Seattle, which is where we're located, which is great because people can come in, get to visit our office while those happen. But we also have been taking them on the road, and we have two of those coming up in July. So if you're in Denver or if you're in London, you should check out Moz Talks and come out and meet us.
Very cool. Very cool. I love that, you know, I feel like, you know, when you talk about the community team at many organizations, that's kind of just code for the online, the social arm of things. I love that events is kind of bundled in there. I mean, to me, that makes sense. But it seems like a delineation that, many force that probably doesn't need to be there.
Yeah, so we really think about our events as really experiences for our community. One thing I love as an event runner at Moz is that every dime we make on our events goes back into the event itself. So a lot of other organizations, you know, they have pressure to mm-hmm. deliver some sort of profit on top of event running. And I can tell you, like, I love running events, but if I wanted to get rich, I would not be an event runner.
Right.
It's very, like, it's very expensive to put on a great event. And like our main show, MozCon, I think we have like a $1.3 million budget. And if we were told like, oh, and you got to make some money on top of that, you know, we would really have to cut down on the experience and the show. And that's not just, that's not what we want to deliver to our community. So I feel really lucky that we're able to put it all back into the show and not have to worry about.
Yeah, well, there are only, it seems like there's only a handful of events out there that that are really kind of those great big cash cows. You know, most have some sort of a, it's a tricky business to be in. But I think it's such an important part, I think, of I don't want to say community management, but of community support too, is to, you know, provide all these venues, all of this content conversation online, but providing a forum to do it offline as well, I think is so powerful.
Yeah, people love to meet each other in person, and people, our entire staff goes. So right now Moz is actually 200 people, which is pretty crazy. When I was hired, it was like 40 people. And, you know, they love to come and meet us face to face to talk about, you know, what they love or maybe what they don't love about our product or our brand. But they also, you know, have created invaluable friendships amongst the, you know, amongst each other in the community. And so if they're having a problem with something they're working on, you know, you may be the only, say, in-house SEO and no one understands what you're doing and you have this unsolvable problem, you now have friends you can reach out to and talk to it about.
And I think that that does something for the Moz brand too. When you have been the one that has kind of been that convener, you know, that you brought those people, helped foster, helped create that friendship.
Yeah, I do think that everyone who comes to MozCon, I really feel that those people will always have a kind of soft spot in their heart for our brand because they will have had this experience. I mean, we feed people, we feed them good food. For instance, last 2 years ago, we had some complaints about the coffee that the convention center serves, right? So we live in Seattle, people are coffee snobs, is
right.
The thing. So last year, we partnered with an espresso company. And they came and made espresso for our attendees. It was pretty intense. Like there were like several stands, just like if you know went to your Starbucks or whatever your preferred coffee shop is. So we're able to do things like that. We have a big stage, so we make our speakers, you know, feel really good about themselves, and we help not just. You know, it doesn't just build our brand, but it also really builds their brand because they look so great on stage and with what they're doing. And then we also put on all these evening events. So it's really for us about a fully immersive branded experience. We do have some partners, which is kind of a new thing for us, but they have a really low impact. So, you know, a lot of times you go to a conference, you know, when you're thinking about branding, you go to someone's conferences and they have all these sponsors and like every room is plastered with someone's name. You know, it'll be like, this is the Google room, or there'll be like a big banner. But with Moz, we've really focused on it being still like a very Moz branded event. But then like, how can we find partners who give actual value back to our attendees? So like our sponsorship programs actually invite only. So we reach out to them versus the other way, which is usually what sponsorship is.
Yeah.
And so right now, all of our sponsors, I believe, are also SaaS businesses, so software businesses. And we really focus on like, who are the people that we think our attendees will get value from? So like a couple of partners we have are like White Spark, and their service in Canada that they're based in Canada, that they help people with like their local citation listings for local SEO. We have Wistia, they're a video hosting platform, and we have GetStat. They do like enterprise keyword rankings. So when we think about like, who do we want to partner with? We think about companies that would be really valuable for our attendees. A lot of these companies we actually use ourselves. So we're advocates for them because of the awesome things they do. And also, so Moz has, we have a core value system called TAGFEE, which stands for transparency, authenticity, generosity, fun, empathy, and exceptional. And we definitely apply this to our partners. They have to, you know, live up to a certain standard of quality.
Very cool. Well, you know, and that's a different way of handling that too. I mean, like you said, in the sponsorship, events are tricky. Sponsorships are essential, and most just, you know, kind of sell what they can sell to whomever they can sell it to. But I think, you know, creating an event that is in line with your brand, that I like what you said too about keeping it very much a Moz focused event as well. I think having the right sponsors to kind of play in that overall ecosystem that are relevant to both the Moz brand and also to what you're doing and to what, you know, those that are there attendee-wise are doing as well.
Yeah, it just makes for a better overall experience and a more cohesive experience. You know, there's nothing I think any of us hate more than walking in an exhibitor hall where we just kind of feel like we're getting attacked by salespeople or kind of like empty promises or, you know, I was at a conference like a couple months ago. I was speaking at it and, you know, when I was in the exhibitor hall, a few people, you know, tried to like get my attention to sell me product. Okay, that's what you're there for. Cool. But when they found out that I was from Moz and they knew I didn't need their service, it was just like, oh, hi, nice to meet you. Yeah, have a good day.
So you found something that works in the in a noisy exhibit hall. That's good to know. That's information you can use. Well, it's interesting because it kind of makes me think of you know, some of the parallels with new media in terms of kind of the parallels to the in-person side of that. You take, you know, convening a thoughtful event that provides value versus I'm going to stand in this hall with a bunch of other people all in a row and you're going to walk down it and I'm going to try to say something to get you to stop. It just seems like, again, to kind of highlight the differences between providing valuable content online versus just kind of noisily advertising at someone.
Definitely. And, you know, we market to marketers also. So, like, as marketers, we know all the tricks in the book. We use them.
Yeah. It's funny, though, that we kind of forget. In a lot of ways, we're one of the toughest audiences to get through to because we do know all of those tricks. But it's funny how many still kind of fall prey to those as well. So in the first two buckets of community work that you do, the online ones, the social side, the content, forums, what are you seeing in terms of having a, you know, kind of small, scrappy team, but a vast community? How do you balance that in terms of providing the best content in the best form?
Mm-hmm. So we are very much believers on our team that it doesn't really matter where you interact with us. You are part of our community. So if you're just tweeting at us for whatever reason, and that's how you're interacting with us, cool. You're part of our community. If you're just reading a blog post or if you're commenting, you're part of our community. And we really look at our members. We try to treat everyone very equally, because it's part of what we believe in fostering, especially fostering beginners and people who are just entering online marketing. We realize that those people, they aren't going to be our customer yet. And they would probably like not be great for our product when they're starting out, because you have to have a certain level of knowledge. But if we build that branded relationship with them, and if we have good interactions, and if we help them out with, say, our like beginner's guide to SEO, or maybe a blog post is something they didn't know about, or maybe we help them out with a question on Twitter or Facebook, we know that that creates that positive association. So maybe in a little bit, when they're, you know, looking for some SEO software, or they're looking for further resources, or a conference they want to come to, they'll think about us.
I love that point of it doesn't matter where you interact with us, you're part of our community. And I think that that's such a big way to think of it too, when you talk about who your people are, because I think sometimes we focus too far down the funnel or whatever organizational shape one is using and focus only on those. But I think that, again, looking at, you know, all of those that you can serve, you know, with a beginner's guide, with something somewhere, do you chunk out the kind of levels of information, of help, of support that you provide based on that that need, that kind of, again, if you think of something like SEO as a skill, is it a beginner, intermediate, advanced, or how are you organizing that?
So we haven't, I mean, to be honest, when it comes to our content, we haven't traditionally done a great job at, you know, really labeling those types of things. I mean, our beginner's guide is called the beginner's guide, so that's pretty obvious, but kind of the rest of us, and this is something, so we actually have a whole separate content team, which I believe they're up to 4 people now, and they've been really trying to tackle this problem of how can we organize the information on our website, especially on our website, in a way that we can label different sort of knowledge levels and we can better serve those audiences. I would say like we have some technical challenges with our website that we are trying to solve but are currently not solved. And I think that there's a lot of things that we could be doing that we're not. And I feel like the whole team knows this, so I'm not like coming down on anyone. Everyone's awesome. We all know we have these problems and we're all trying to fix them. But, you know, when it comes to like our social media or when people are reaching out to us, you know, if someone comes with like a really beginner SEO question, we would never sit there and be like, well, you should read our beginner's guide, then you should buy our software. Like, that's totally the wrong audience, totally the wrong thing we're targeting. So we work closely with our help team, which is our support team, and they actually have been doing a wonderful job of both reactive and proactive outreach to our different customers based on usually it's more customers than community members, but kind of based on their knowledge levels or how long they've been customers. And so they've been doing things like proactively giving webinars and trainings and being like, oh, do you know like this section of the tool that I've never seen you use, based on like kind of customer history and how customers come on board, hoping, you know, to get, you know, because we want people to get the most value out of our tool, but we also know if you are using more of the tool and as part of your routine as a marketer, you will stay a customer longer. So it's kind of interesting, and there are some like kind of lines. If we suggest that they talk to our help and support team, if a customer has, you know, let's say something's broken for them when they come into our tool and they tweet at us, and if there's not some sort of like everyone who has a Moz account has that thing broken for them at this moment, then we have to pass them along to our help team because it's, you know, like an account specific thing. So that's kind of the avenue and kind of a delineation of what we do and how much we can really, how much we can dive into like the customer servicey aspect.
Right.
And we also kind of, because a lot of people obviously come to us for knowledge, and sometimes people, especially this happens on Twitter, where people will ask you really in-depth questions, and you're like, I can't answer that in 140 characters. but also with six people on our team, like not everyone has that same knowledge bucket to draw from. Like we all have different experiences in online marketing. So we do often recommend like, oh, hey, we're not consultants anymore. We'd love to help you, but you should head to our Q&A forum to ask that question and, you know, get an answer from the community instead of us trying to hash this out in 140 characters. And it may be different people on as our account and they may not have the same knowledge.
So do you do, as you move people through the various stages there, you know, what about, you know, I mean, I think the kind of front-end community management, some of the I have a problem with X, that kind of need-based challenges. What about the other side of that, the brand advocacy side?
So we're really lucky, I feel like. And we, I feel, don't have to do and don't do as much of the purposeful kind of reaching out to the community to be brand advocates. Mm-hmm. Instead, we found that giving people avenues to talk about their problems, giving people that like in-person event fun, and giving people this level of support and equal treatment is what turns people into being brand advocates for us. And we don't have to necessarily be like, okay, this person's an influencer in our industry and we should reach out to them and build this relationship and kind of this like, haha, I will get all the pawns in my, you know, arms and we will make this happen. So, you know, again, we're lucky about this. And some of it has to do with how Moz was founded. Like Rand, our founder, he has lots of close relationships with people in the industry. People love him. He also has some haters, but you got to have haters in your community too, because if you don't have haters, no, that means no one actually cares about your brand.
Absolutely. That's a concept that that I love. I feel like I think it was like a Paul Newman quote or something that, you know, it's as much a measure of what you're doing if you have if you have enemies. And I think that's a huge point, especially on the brand nerd side of things, because if you are making an impression, then there, and if it's strong, there's going to be some people that aren't in your camp. And Patrick Hanlon has a book called Primal Branding, and he talks about, you know, one of the seven required components. And one of them is, I don't think he calls them haters, but it's basically your counterpoint, you know. And you look at the strongest brands. You look at Apple coming up, and you know there had to be kind of the Microsoft PC side of things. And you know, you look at something like coffee, something like Starbucks. I think anything that is unremarkable, regular Folgers drip coffee is kind of the antithesis there. So I do think that that we need that. It makes me think of your. I was trying to think of your exact phrase. Your earthquake hazard of a comic book collection. And there's not a great story out there that doesn't have a nemesis, a villain.
Oh, yeah. You do not want to be at my house if there's no earthquake. Actually, you do, because my house is really structurally sound because it's like a newer build. But you want to not be near the bookcases.
Thank you for that really thoughtful and practical asterisk that you know, really it's the event manager in you that is the wanting to still assure attendees that it's structurally sound. It is just the comic books contained within it.
Yes.
And for proof, I noticed, I believe that is your, you have at least part of that collection as your header photo on Twitter.
Yes. I had some lovely headshots done, and we did some in front of my comic book collection. So
that is impressive. I'm trying to think of some good segue from branding into comic books, and other than it being a great time for comic book brands.
Yeah, they have all those movies. But I would say that their marketing is not so great.
Yeah. That is interesting. What do you think is lacking?
Really, I don't know what kind of budgets they have. I mean, you would think being owned. So in comic books, there's two major players, Marvel and DC. And Marvel's owned by Disney, and DC's owned by Time Warner. So they certainly have
right.
capital and money somewhere. But at least I feel for the individual books. And for comic books themselves, they just don't know how to market them. You know, a new movie will come out featuring a character, and you'd think, oh, they're going to make sure to promote the books for this character. Yeah. So if people come in and are like, I just saw the Captain America movie or the X-Men movie or the upcoming Suicide Squad movie, it was great. I really enjoyed it. Now what can I read?
Yeah, it is. It's an interesting marketing challenge. See, we've done it. We've made the segue here. But I feel like, yeah, in comic book world, you have... I have this image in my head. You have these great big battleship-sized cruisers, and then you've got these little tiny rowboats, and you've got kind of no linkage between them in terms of kind of connective tissue, and it seems like, yeah, you could have a hell of a pull-through strategy, and it's just you're kind of left to your own devices, and I don't know why that is.
Part of the problem is, and this is like really comic book technically nerdy.
Go there.
Is that all comic books, or most every single comic books, are put through one distributor called Diamond. And they control where, when, and how fast comic books get to different places. So this happened in the 90s when the like comic book market kind of got really hot for a second, and everyone thought comic books were going to be like the next big collectible Beanie Baby thing. And predictably, it totally failed, totally backfired. And all the comic companies were like, this was before they were bought by the big corporations. They said, oh, how can we save ourselves? Oh, it's really expensive to ship books. I don't know if you've ever like moving. So I recently moved, and moving my comic books, like those boxes are so heavy. It's ridiculous. So they're like, let's consolidate our distribution. So this company, Diamond, was like, okay, we'll distribute all your comic books. So they kind of, in many ways, stranglehold the industry for distribution. It's one of the reasons why you don't really see. So it used to be back in the day, you could go like the grocery store and buy comic books. You can't really do that today because of how comic books are distributed. And comic books are also this weird game where stores have to pre-order books, and then Diamond doesn't let them return books. So if they don't sell them, so as a rabid comic book person who goes to the store every week and gets a stack of comic books, I actually pre-order all my books. So my store, like I tell my store, this book is coming out and I want it. And I put it on my like subscription list. And so every month when that book comes out, I get it. And I get it at the store and they like reserve it for me. And, you know, that's really how comic book stores make money. It's not just, unfortunately, the random people coming in after they've seen that Captain America movie wanting a book.
Right, right. Well, and we're fortunate enough to have shops. I guess you may have shops in Seattle. I have a shop here in Iowa City. So
yes, there's that too.
I love that was actually a very relevant on-brand examination of the comic book challenge. Favorite comic book series, character, book?
So right now I've been really digging the Midnighter series by Steve Orlando, which it actually just ended, but then DC announced that they're like reviving it in November. This also happens with comic books. They play this like everyone will buy number ones game.
Yeah.
So Midnighter was created as an analogy of Batman. Previously was not owned by DC, but DC bought up the smaller comic book publisher. And he was essentially created to be the gay Batman.
Oh, cool.
But much more violent. He actually kills people. Oh. Unlike if you ever read a Batman comic, that's like one of Batman's things in the comic books. I'm not sure how well it translated to the movies, but he doesn't actually kill people.
I think I saw something just this week on one of the sites that said that of all of the incarnations of Batman, that I guess somehow Ben Affleck's Batman has already killed more than Batman usually does.
I can believe that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, interesting. Interesting stuff. I think the most recent. It is because there's a lot of pull through from the movies. Because I had never gotten around to reading the Old Man Logan story with Wolverine, and knowing that that might be somewhat of an influence on the upcoming picture, I wanted to grab that. So I just gave that one a look. So it is an interesting time in the comic book biz. Definitely with a lot of the different points that you noted there. So we will be sure to link up to all of that in our show notes. Erica.
Yeah, and for I will answer anyone's questions if they're like, that was so confusing. Please reach out to me. We can talk more comic books.
Absolutely. I know. You know, I it made me want to like keep going down that path. And I'm like, I need to find some other better comic book podcast to listen. You probably know. Do you have the comic book podcast that we should all be listening to?
Oh, I can't say I actually listen to comic book podcasts.
Yeah, I randomly get some podcast comic book commentary from NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. They do a little bit.
Yes, every they're now good. And
then. Yes.
I also know that Jay Adeen does a podcast about X-Men comics, just about X-Men. So if X-Men is your jam, you should definitely listen.
If that is awesome. We'll link up to that also. This has been the most resourceful episode of the On Brand podcast related to the topic of comic books, I believe, thus far. So as we start to wrap up, Erica, what is a brand, comic book or otherwise, that has made you smile recently?
Well, it's not comic book brands. Sorry, friends.
Oh,
but,
womp.
So the brand Herschel, they make like bags. They're very popular in Seattle because they make really nice ones that you can put your laptops in. And, you know, we have a bunch of tech workers here.
Uh-huh.
So recently I was on a trip and in Europe and I was using one of their bags and like a tiny piece, like a latch on the strap broke. And I was like, oh no. Do I have to like throw this entire bag out? Because like I can't use the strap now. This bag's like useless to carry. But they're awesome. And the first thing I always do is like I go on Twitter and I'm like, does this brand use Twitter? Can I just ask them a customer service question here and make it easy on my life? And they are super responsive to customers on Twitter. And they were like, yeah, just take a picture of what it is and email us at our customer service support. And so I emailed them and I was like, oh, I broke this bag and it's not even my bag. It's my partner's bag. He's going to be really mad at me. And it's just like this tiny little metal piece that broke off. And sure enough, within a couple weeks, I got the little tiny piece in the mail and they sent like a bunch of stickers and like other brand loyalty kind of things with it. And I was like, this is so nice and sweet. And I can like not be the bad guy for breaking my partner's bag. And it, you know, next time I'm looking for a bag, I'm sure I'll think of that experience and be like, maybe I should buy from them.
It saved you from being the bad guy. Well, I love it's definitely kind of keeping with your theme of you know, of the simple stuff too. I mean, that's so easy, and that's such a basic version, especially in the bag business, of a product problem. And, oh, someone mentioned they had a problem and we fixed it. And we tossed in a little bit of fun in there. Makes me think of you talking about brand advocacy. Well, we answer people's questions and we host good events. You know, not everything needs to be an overly complex program or initiative.
Yes.
Awesome. Erica, where can people go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
So you can follow me on Twitter. I'm E. McGillivray. That's E-M-C-G-I-L-L-I-V-R-A-Y. It's kind of my most active network. But you can also, if you're interested in comic book reviews, you can head to sliverofice.com, which is my domain, and check that out. But if you want to like catch up with like Moz stuff, you can always catch me on the Moz blog or in our Q&A forum as well.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Erica, thanks for joining us on
Thanks
Brand.
For having me on.
And as a reminder, speaking of community, we always like to flip the microphone around a little bit and give some credit, give some love to our own community as well. And this week, wanted to give some to our friends at Marketo. I'm doing a free webinar for them on Get Scrappy, my new book coming up here on July 21st. You can register for that. There's a great big link of my smiling face at the homepage of their website. So head over to Marketo, sign up for that webinar. And as a reminder, if you liked something on this show or another, or if you have a question, comic book or otherwise, that you'd like one of our guests to answer, just use the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may hear your thoughts right here on the show. Last but not least, you can find links to everything that we talked about over at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Remember, On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Order now at Amazon and check out getscrappybook.com for special offers and extras. And finally, On Brand is brought to you by the Social Brand Forum. This premier digital marketing experience takes place September 22nd and 23rd in beautiful downtown Iowa City, Iowa. Learn from experts like Jay Baer, Joe Palizzi, and Ginny Dietrich in the heart of the heartland. Listeners of the show get the best rate when they register using promo code ONBRAND at socialbrandforum.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.